White Sox fans, and welcome to another edition of the Future Sox podcast. My name is Ian Eskridge. Joining me this afternoon is James Fox, as normal. And we are also very excited to have the play-by-play voice of the Winston-Salem Dash with us, Andrew Murphy. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm excited for the season to get rolling along here soon. Recording this on a Wednesday, and opening day in Asheville is Friday. So things are coming together, and I'm in the process of getting my ducks in a row and taking care of things here in Winston. But just ready to get going. And thanks so much for having me on. I know this has been kind of a long time coming here. We've been talking about this for a few years now.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for coming on. We really appreciate it. So I know that James is excited about it. I'm excited about it. Noah Schultz starting the year with Winston-Salem. Let's go ahead and start the whole thing off talking about basically everybody's number two prospect with the White Sox, Noah Schultz. Have you talked to him yet? Have you seen him around?
I've said like 10 words to the guy. he's been very busy. Pulled him for media day yesterday, and he got some good FaceTime with the local media. But no, I haven't really had a chance to sit down and have a lengthier conversation with Noah, or a lot of these guys, for that matter, just because it's so hit the ground running. But what I can tell from the few interactions I've had is that he's just a nice guy, and he's ready to go. He's ready to compete, and I've been reading things about what he's been doing in the offseason to prepare for this year, which is, it's going to be his first full season in affiliated baseball. Kind of a, I don't want to say prove it year, because he's proved a lot already. But again, it's gonna be a more accurate indication of how he might pan out long term with more innings under his belt. But really, the first thing that sticks out about the guy is that he's 6'9", a towering presence on the mound, gives him that nice natural downward plane with his fastball and his secondary stuff, and just a fearsome left-hander. No surprise that he's high on everybody's list.
Yeah. We're hearing from Arizona that he's hitting, high 90s on his fastball, and that the slider's just looking absolutely ridiculous. You have anything, James, that you want to address?
So I had got some intel today and kind of reported like how the White Sox are expected to treat Schultz, where it's going to be more of kind of like a college starter, where he's starting Saturday apparently, and he's going to start every Saturday, so he's not in the typical rotation. So not expecting you to confirm that, but like, if that's the case, how do you like manage a minor league rotation in high A? Like, if you know what I mean? If everybody else kind of stays in rotation and he goes every week, essentially.
Well, that's kind of the thing about this roster, is that there are more dynamic pitchers on this roster, guys who can carry the load of a starter a little more regularly and respond well to kind of that oblong strategy that they have for Schultz. I don't know if that's true or not at this point, but if that's the case, they definitely have the manpower to supplement that. So derail too far from Schultz, because he kind of is the star of the show coming into this year, but I'm looking at just other natural starters on here. We got Juan Correa in that trade with the Yankees last year. Riley Gowans, who knows what he's going to be capable of as a starter. Tanner McDougal, Peyton Paulette. We got Tyler Schweitzer. Even Jonas Scalaro made a few starts last year. So there's a certain dynamic nature to the pitching staff this year that's going to see guys who can both start and help out in the bullpen.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to get into the rest of the staff here. And you answered the question about Gowans. Because we don't really know what the plan on him is. We talked a little bit about this before we hopped on, that he did have half starts and half relief appearances. So, last year Noah had Mason Adams piggybacking on him in Kannapolis. And I kind of had the thought that maybe that might possibly be a role that he would fill, knowing that he can go a little bit longer. But, again, you know, it's just kind of thinking out loud here. I don't know exactly what, you know, what the role would be.
Well, it's conditional. I mean, it's going to be day to day, week to week, just depending on how this the more rigid strategies for those top guys like Noah Schultz kind of pan out. So, like any minor league season, there are going to be you know, unforeseen things that pop up, and the key to any good baseball player, any good baseball team is how you respond. And I think that the White Sox have been good, at least the 3 years I've spent so far behind the mic. They've done a good job of that, making sure that they're open to moving guys to a different role.
Also, just a random thought here. I mean, we also have Paulette and McDougal, who are both, you know, last year had their year coming back from TJ. So, you know, it's a good thing. I mean, when you look at the roster here and just the sheer amount of names that are on the pitching staff, to me, it seems like a good idea, because we, you know, who knows how many innings you can really expect out of those two. And you already know that Noah Schultz is probably going to be on not necessarily a innings limit per se, you know, but you could probably expect a little bit less than you would, you know, it's not going to be 6-7 innings out of him, you know?
No, but I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if later on in the season it does get to 6-7 innings, you know? But again, just with the nature of any minor league roster and typical plan, I mean, they're not looking for guys to eat innings in the minors. I mean, they do have those set kind of plans for them, and that's up to the powers that be. So, but again, I mean, we have guys who have a track record of going long. I mean, Juan Correla is certainly a guy who, to me, profiles as a guy who can really go the distance. Peyton Paulette, I mean, injury troubles last year kind of holding him back from logging as many innings as I think, you know, as I know he wanted to. He wanted to play for the full season. But, you know, for guys like Peyton, this is going to be, again, I mean, this will be his first real, you know, full season of baseball, God willing, he stays healthy. And his numbers, I mean, I was looking at him earlier, cause I'm horrible at memorizing numbers. you know, record aside, I mean, his numbers weren't bad. I mean, he struck out 78 guys in 72 innings. I was talking to him a little bit earlier today. I mean, he seems ready to go. All these guys are ready to go. There's not a whole lot holding anybody back. And, you know, you can pick apart certain things. Like for a guy like Paulette, right? Oh, you know, his fastball used to touch 99 and he's having trouble getting it back. Of course he is. Of course he is. That's the nature of recovering from an injury. So I'll be interested to see how a guy like Paulette kind of builds back. This is a build back year for him. So yeah.
Yeah, I will say, like, that's like Paulette and McDougal both were, like, as Ian mentioned, were back from Tommy John last year, but the one Paulette had 72 innings. McDougal was right around 70 as well, I believe. So I would think those guys are, you know, not that they're going 6 innings every time, but you're looking at an increase there. I mean, those guys are probably well over 100 where there's really not that many restrictions. So, you know, I think the only restricted guy would be Schultz. And if they're doing what I expect them to, I mean, those are 5 or 6 inning starts too, I think. So, you know, but there is a lot of cover, like we talked about, with guys in this bullpen, like not necessarily prospects, but guys like Cole Densing and Garrett, how do you say, Shanley. Yeah. So, you know, like those guys can rack up innings as well. And then the minor league Rule 5 guy, Ian, Jose Ramirez, he made 20 starts for the Red Sox last year. So I don't know if, look, maybe they think that's a relief convert and the stuff's going to play up or whatever, but he's got starts too.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, there's lots of innings there, you know, in those arms. It's just how they're going to plan on, you know, divvying up those innings. I don't think there'll be any shortage of arms, that's for sure.
Andrew, do you have any expectation of like a traditional closer? Like, I know Eric Adler is like our highest rated prospecty type guy, you know, but that doesn't mean that he's getting the ninth every day.
I mean, that's definitely the first name that popped into my head was Eric Adler. I mean, he's got kind of the makeup and track record of a closer. He was a guy who last year when the game was really close or on the line, we really needed somebody to take the mound and get the job done. Adler comes out and I would take a, you know, a breath. I'd be like, all right, we're the Dasher in good hands here. He'll be just fine. And he's good in high pressure situations too, like runners in scoring position. I know a couple of times he was able to just kind of shed any fear he might have had about runners on second or third and just focus on getting the guy out at the plate. And he's got it. I mean, the fastball is great. Secondary stuff is, I mean, not mind blowing, but it's there. It's good. So yeah, Adler for sure in my mind is the as close to a tried and true closer as I think we have on this roster.
You want to move on to the position players here, James?
Yeah, I think so. So that's what I was going to, I mean, look, one of the guys you got coming to you is a little bit of a lightning rod for fans a little bit last year. Just look, the season that Jacob Gonzalez had in his draft season wasn't great. I think me and Ian kind of, you know, try to, I don't know, I don't really take the draft year of college guys specifically very seriously. So he struggled some, but there were good reports in instructs. What are you expecting out of Jacob Gonzalez? I can't wait to check in with you as the season moves along to see how he's doing.
Well, Jacob Gonzalez, I mean, the first thing that stands out about him is his track record at Ole Miss. You know, those are not numbers that are easy to come by. His career, what is it, 319 hitter, 435 on base, 564 slugging with 40 home runs, 158 runs batted in. He's a bat. He's a bat through and through. And I know he's got an unorthodox kind of stance and swing, but it works for him. And I know that his numbers last year with Kannapolis were not great. I chalk that up to a couple of things. One, kind of getting adjusted to the everyday, the playing everyday kind of grind that comes with that transition from college to pro ball. The other thing, too, that I might chalk it up to is perhaps a more advanced level of pitching. It could have been the yips as well. I'm not really sure, but I don't like to dwell on that because again, it wasn't a full season, and I mean, what, it was only 30 games, so small sample size there. I dwell on what he was able to do as a good team guy at Ole Miss, and really kind of use what's different about him to his advantage. I saw him take a couple of swings in batting practice today, but you know, I'll be interested to see how he starts out as an everyday player. I think there's a big question mark above his head though as to where he's going to end up defensively. And I was initially a little kind of confused at you know, why the White Sox went with him first, because wait, didn't we just, you know, shoot Colson Montgomery through the rankings and you got DeYoung keeping the shortstop spot warm at the big league level? So I was like, all right, that's interesting. And automatically I thought maybe there's some versatility there. Maybe they see some versatility in him that that'll serve them well long term. As to where that position is, I'm not really sure. I would assume he starts at shortstop opening day and continues there for a while. I know he's not the quickest guy. The fielding aspect is there, the throwing aspect is there, but I think it's gonna take a month or two to really get a clearer picture of where he ends up in the field long term. But other than that, I think all the intangibles of above average hitter are there. And I think that if the White Sox play their cards right in developing him. I think it's gonna pay off for them long term, and I think he's gonna be, I think he's gonna contribute. He's gonna be an impact guy at the major league level someday.
I think the experience level for him, you know, between Team USA and Ole Miss and winning the College World Series is obviously a huge, you know, check for him, you know, as far as draft status goes. And I know, you know, me and James have both seen a video of him and a retooled swing from his time at Kannapolis last year. So, you know, I also need to, you know, like, I want to see with my eyes what, you know, very, very small sample size of like three swings that I've seen a video of, but the swing looks completely different. So I'm interested to see what that translates to. And also with a level bump, the competition's going to go up. So, you know, I kind of felt a little bit weird about it last year because, you know, low A, usually the top college guys come through low A and they, you know, have like a pretty decent showing at least. And it, you know, like the passes on the ball in low A were just a little light for me. So I'm really hoping to see an uptick in at least projectability in his swing in Winston-Salem. We'll see.
Well, from the swing alone, I mean, from the few hacks I saw him take today, it was pretty clear that he had retooled his swing. I mean, it just in watching video from his days at Ole Miss, I mean, he was definitely more hunched in, kind of crowding the plate a little bit, and he seemed to have backed off, but his bat path is still very level, and he's able to still kind of reach for, you know, outside pitches and even snag some low and inside. So he's got a good feel for the zone, and his plate discipline is probably pretty good. I mean, again, I won't have a better gauge of that until I see him play, you know, almost every day. But I'm very optimistic about him. I think he has all the intangibles that he needs, and I think the White Sox should do a good job of developing him into an impact player.
So the other guy that at the atop the prospect list that's coming to Winston this year, part of the return for Dylan Cease, we've got Samuel Zavala. Have you been able to see him out on the field yet at all?
Yeah. I actually, I talked to him, yesterday for a little bit, just, you know, general, how you feeling? How you doing? They got a job to do. I don't know. I'm not having 15-minute conversations with these guys while they're in the cage, but, he seems full of energy. He seems like he's ready. He seems like, the transition from one system to, another really didn't phase him. Just he seems like he's going to play his same game, just in a different uniform and a different system. So, yeah, real explosive bat. Just from the swings at BP today. I mean, you got that real high inward leg kick where he just harnesses all that power, and then the bat speed is magnificent. I think 80 grade, if not close to it. But something tells me that maybe sometimes that bat speed can kind of control him a little more than he controls it. And I don't know. I mean, again, limited sample size, and I haven't gotten a feel for how good Jim Rickon is at throwing BP. But at the same time, I mean, there's a reason that he fit comfortably into the Sox top 30 as soon as he was acquired in the trade. So again, another guy who I think is going to just play explosive, and I'm really excited about.
And I would imagine he's likely the primary center fielder. This is like a roster with some guys with some versatility. Who do you expect to see like next to him, like in the outfield corners? I know DJ Gladney's on this team, but the other spot I wasn't really totally sure about.
Well, Chris Lanzilli spent some time with us. He was up, I think he broke camp with us last year and then was sent down to Kannapolis for like the middle third of the season. And then as some more guys moved up to Birmingham, he came in and filled the role of an almost everyday corner outfielder. So, yeah, Lanzilli's a, I mean, he's a decent enough defender. I don't think I've seen him in too many situations where he's had to make, I mean, super impressive grabs. But Lanzilli is, Lanzilli, if he can find some more consistency with the bat, is going to be a force at the plate. He's just a dense human being, and he's got a lot of raw power. So that's where I see Lanzilli contributing the most. But we've only got three outfielders on this roster. It's Gladney and Lanzilli in either of the corners, and then Zavala will be the everyday center fielder. As to how that might change, I'm not sure. But those are the three that the Dash have right now.
Yeah, because there are some other, you know, there's some guys like Wes Kath is obviously second go round at Winston. I would imagine he's going to be at third most likely. And then there are a couple other infielders, obviously, as well. Are you surprised to get Lloydell Chepaty back? Or
it was interesting because Chepaty was he's here. He's here now. But Mario Camaletti appeared on the roster first, and then he wasn't here yesterday. I'm not sure if there's an injury or not there, but I was hearing that maybe he should be good to go within a matter of weeks. I'm really not sure where Chepaty fits then. And Ian and I were talking before we started. The system for middle infielders is kind of backloaded. But you know, whether it's here, whether it's Birmingham, Chepaty really has a gift as a defender. He is not afraid to lay out for hard hit line drives. He can make, you know, sneaky backhand plays. Just a real smooth glove. His bat was questionable last year, but I want to see all these guys thrive. But I really want Chepaty to settle into kind of a more consistent role as to where he fits, you know, within the system. But again, I mean, I know there's a lot of there are a lot of backloaded areas in the system, and right now the middle infield just kind of happens to be one of those places. But no, I mean, he was out here yesterday going full speed like he would anywhere else. So yeah, but I mean, Camaletti is another guy who's very interesting in that he's primarily a second baseman as well. But I think there were a couple of games where they stuck him in the corner in the corner outfield. I think in Bowling Green, the last series versus them, he was in left field last year. And I don't remember anything I don't remember anything negative. I don't remember him looking outstanding, but again, the fact that they have enough confidence to place him there, he can get the job done. So there's a lot of defensive versatility on this roster as well, and Camaletti very well may be one of those guys.
Do you think, looking at the guys that are here, I know I've seen Gusenberg at first, and I definitely see Gladney, obviously, at first because he was a first baseman, and then they put him in the outfield. So who are you thinking gets the most of the time at first base?
Most time at first? I would say Sean Gusenberg, probably. Bryce Willits was also a guy who saw some time at first base last year. But again, he's another one of those kind of dynamic infielders as well. So, but I think Sean Gusenberg, at least, you know, for the first month or two of the season, depending on his path this year, will see the most time at first base. Could be wrong, though.
Yeah, I mean, you just look at like all these guys that are on this list here, and you know, like Chepaty, he's originally was an outfielder. The White Sox moved him to second base, so I mean, technically, I guess you could probably stick him out in the outfield if you wanted to. Gladney, they've been playing in the outfield. Gusenberg, I think he's played left field before as well, and he's a second baseman. Jacob Gonzalez, shortstop, you know, has also been projected as possibly being a second baseman. I mean, there's just, and then you got Nakawaki shortstop, Jordan Sprinkle shortstop. I mean, there's just, there's a lot of movement. There can be a lot of possibilities for Quiroz to move things around there.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, that's a good problem to have, you know. Some of the best defenses in the major leagues are composed of guys who you can mix and match with every day. So, yeah, good problem to have. But, I mean, again, just a lot of raw talent defensively on this roster that I think can sometimes get overlooked. I think defensive talent is one of the things that can go unsung. So, I love the outlook. And just kind of a lot of moving pieces.
For sure. do you want to touch on the catching situation, James, before we move to the coaching staff?
Well, so, I mean, two catchers listed right now. I mean, I was assuming last year's fourth round pick out of Ole Miss, Calvin Harris, would be in Winston. We had kind of heard he's rehabbing an injury in Arizona. I don't know how bad it is. So you guys just have the two catchers for now on the roster, it seems.
Yeah, Weston Eberle out of Columbia, and then Colby Smelly, who was with us for, I think, a majority of last year, if not all of last year, out of Shelton State Community College in good old Tuscaloosa. I was talking with Colby earlier just about the pitching staff. And, you know, I mean, the catching situation has it's been – not the forefront of the discussion as it pertains to the farm system, but there've been a lot of big names. I mean, with Hackenberg and with Michael Turner, I mean, certainly Turner, I can't believe that he spent as much time in high A as he did last year. He is so talented, and he's honestly a better bat for a catcher than I've seen. But yeah, I think catchers this year aren't going to be the focus. I think the focus is pitching primarily, with you know, Schultz kind of being the face of that. I mean, again, not to derail too far from catching, but I mean, there's just you know, I mean, neither of these guys show up on the top 30. No discredit to them. I mean, they're, you know, they're fine ball players. They're pros. You know, but I think it's more about pitching and continuing to develop good position players. But yeah, I really don't have a whole lot to talk about catching wise, besides the fact that I'm glad to see guys who played here the past 3 years move up and earn the promotions that they deserve. And who's to say that Eberle or Smelly won't pop off the same way this year? I mean, they're both talented guys in their own right, and that's kind of the beauty of minor league baseball, is that with a new season, you never know who's going to start to blip as a little spot on somebody's radar.
So you guys do have a entirely new coaching staff in Winston-Salem. What are your takeaways so far?
Well, not an entirely new coaching staff. I mean, Guillermo Quiroz is back as our manager, but he's got a new staff below him. John Kovalik is the pitching coach, and he comes from the Astros system. He had been there since 2018. No affiliated professional experience, but he did pitch for 3 years in the American Association after being a pretty solid reliever at Slippery Rock University in Pennsylvania. Funny enough, where our president GM graduated from college. So it's funny how those things kind of intersect. But nevertheless, the guys seem to have a good rapport with him already just during live ABs today. I was pleasantly surprised to see him interact well and just kind of, you know, joke around, but also get the job done that he needs to in monitoring these guys with the, with the Rapsodo and everything. But yeah, I mean, clearly experienced though as a pitching coach in affiliated ball, helped the Astros a good bit since 2018. So excited to see kind of how he continues to build that rapport with the guys here in Winston. And then Jim Rickon Ian and I were talking, James, before you hopped on, about how that's kind of a pivot from at least the, as the Dasher concerned, just the experience level of hitting coaches, yeah, at least since I've been here in 2021. So that year it was Mike Daniel. And then the year after it was Nicky Delmonico, first year as a coach. And then last year was Jason Krizan, also first year as a coach. But Jim Rickon brings over 25 years of experience as both player and, you know, as a coach, as a hitting coordinator. You know, that's not something that's easily obtained. That's a lot of time, effort, and energy put into, you know, the field of player development. And I think it's a good sign of what the White Sox want their guys at the lower levels of the minor leagues to look up to and to garner advice and tips from. So kind of a it'll be interesting to see how he works with the guys as well. But he's a great guy, good loose personality, just like the last three have been. I was chopping it up with him yesterday about like Metallica and stuff, which is pretty cool. So and then Darius Day is no stranger to the White Sox either. He spent a good few years as I think a coordinator for the ACE program. So he gets to interact with DJ Gladney day in, day out now, a guy who I'm sure he interacted with quite a bit when coordinating the ACE program. Yeah, and then A.J. Smith moves up a rank from Kannapolis as the athletic trainer. Carson Wooten, after spending 3 years here, has moved up as well. Zach Poston is his assistant athletic trainer. And then Logan Jones returns for his second year as performance coach. Great guy. Logan is, I think he's a North Carolina native, and he played at Guilford College, which is in Greensboro. So he knows the area well, and he's putting these guys on the right track in the weight room and with nutrition plans. And then new clubhouse manager, too, Chance Miller. Had a chance to talk with him yesterday. He's ready to go, getting everything set equipment-wise and taking good care of the clubhouse that we're doing a lot of renovations on here at the stadium. So being able to work around that has to be a challenge in and of itself, let alone getting to know all these guys and having all your ducks in a row with snacks and drinks and just keeping everything neat and tidy. I always like to give the clubhouse manager a shout out as well. So great field staff, a lot of experience. There's just a different energy about this coaching staff this year and how they gel with the players, and it's just it's a real family unit this year, and I'm enjoying kind of the beginnings of it as I do every year. I think this is a good group, and I think it's going to be a really good season.
Do you think there's anything significant about having an actual bench coach? The White Sox haven't for a while. I know once Chris Getz became GM, I don't know the reason for it, all the affiliates now have bench coaches. Any significance behind that?
Well, last year's bench coach was, I don't think he wasn't officially listed as bench coach. I mean, he was just kind of an assistant coach, kind of a rover, doing whatever was needed on a particular day. And I would assume that Darius Day's responsibilities will be pretty similar. But Milwee, and I think Darius kind of fits this too, like, you know, younger kind of morale boosting presence that can relate to the guys on a level that, just comes with being around the same age. At least that's what I saw with Milwee last year. I mean, I like to compare Milwee actually to like a defensive backs coach on like an NCAA football team, you know, like just always high energy, like, you know, the backwards visor wearing type kind of hype man. So that is really kind of that's a responsibility that you don't find, I would imagine, in the job description for something like that. I think, but as to, you know, his specific roles and responsibilities, I mean, I haven't gotten a chance to talk to him much about what that looks like, but given what Daniel Milwee did last year and did very well, I would assume it would look very similar.
Yeah, I mean, Milwee just came off of a opening day roster himself short of a period ago, so.
And Milwee's in Kannapolis this year, so the White Sox clearly love him and want him to continue serving these young guys as they come through the minors.
Do you have anything else player-wise, James? All right. Well, Andrew, I've got a question for you. Okay. Because I know that you're a music guy. I just had a thought. I wanted to know what's your favorite concert that you've been to in the last couple of years here?
Oh, man. Well, so last September, right after the season ended, my girlfriend surprised me with tickets to Widespread Panic in Wilmington, North Carolina. I'm a big jam band guy. Yeah. I love, like, the Grateful Dead. I love Fish. Goose is another one that's come out lately that I really like. But I'm a big musical instrument guy, and I play guitar. I played drums. I played piano. I played bass guitar. It just fascinates me, and I really dig the concept of musical improvisation. I think that's, like, that's the, to me, the greatest test of someone's real skill set as a musician, is can you jump in and just play along with the groove and make it up as you go. So yeah, Widespread Panic at Wilmington was very, very cool. But trying to think, I mean, other concerts, I don't get to too many concerts anymore just because of the rugged schedule that baseball brings, and I wouldn't trade it for the world. Tedeschi Trucks Band is another a solid group that I think more people should know about. I saw them last March in Asheville, and Derek Trucks, I think, is one of the greatest guitarists of all time. I think he is going to go down in the history books with the likes of Hendrix, Clapton. He's really got something special, and he spent his entire life basically around, you know, the influences of Greg Allman and his uncle, who was the drummer of the Allman Brothers Band, one of the two drummers. But yeah, I really admire and respect his playing, and his wife, Susan. Oh my God, she's got a voice like an angel. She's fantastic. So, but I could go on about music for days, man.
Yeah.
I don't want this to turn into a jam band podcast.
That's fair. All right. So I know I've watched the couple of episodes of the Dashcast. Do you want to go ahead and promote anything on your way out?
Yeah. You know, we have a lot to promote this year. I mean, it seems like we have a theme night or a promo night just about every game this season. We just released the Winston-Salem Hype Hens, which is a play on hyphens from last year. So we got really creative with that. Merchandise is available for that, as well as the Winston-Salem Tobacco Beetles, which will be our salute to North Carolina, really. And then we are releasing one more alternate identity coming up here very soon, and that is a salute to Chicago. So White Sox fans, pretty much everybody in Chicagoland, are going to want to tune in for that, because that the one that we haven't released is my favorite. So, yeah, and you know, this year we're really balling out with the different theme nights. I mean, we've got a Taylor Swift night, we've got our Wake Forest night, we've got our Winston-Salem State night, golf night, Education Day, Super Splash Day. The list goes on and on. And we've actually added some new features to the ballpark as well. A big one is the new batting cage. Well, there are two batting cages now in basically the same area where the old one was, looking out over the highway. But we were now compliant in that way with the PDL standards, and that's going to double actually as an event space too. So folks will be able to book events. I think that space can hold up to 200 people. It's massive.
It looks pretty awesome.
Yeah, and then we just renovated our visiting clubhouse, put a new training room in there. I think some upgrades to the home clubhouse might be on the way. I'm not really sure the time frame on that. But fan-facing things this year, the big one is the Lost Worlds Brewing Bar out in left field. That is going to that's going to be kind of a an open kind of social area where folks can kick back and enjoy the game, much like the Wicked Weed Brew Pen or the Foothills Brewing Flight Deck. So, yeah, lots to look forward to at the ballpark this year. And I'm looking at this field right now, and I'm just like, I'm ready for it. I'm ready for it to start, and things are looking really, really good around Winston-Salem. And I want to thank you guys really for making us look good here in the broadcast booth and clipping all those highlights and all the work that you guys do, not only to make us in Winston-Salem look good, but to serve the tried and true White Sox fans who I know are really active and engaged on Twitter and Instagram and just about everywhere else. So. Yeah, thanks a lot for all you guys do, and we're looking forward to another really good season here in Winston.
Appreciate your time. Thank you very much. So if you are listening to this in podcast form, know that you can also watch it on our YouTube channel. You can also find it anywhere that you find your podcast if you are watching it on YouTube. FutureSox.net, you can find all of our written content. You will find a affiliate preview for the Dash and every other affiliate for the White Sox on futuresox.net. You can find a link to Patreon to support us there. My name is Ian Eskridge at Daily White Sox. He is James Fox at James Fox 917. Andrew Murphy, AW Murphy 50. We appreciate your time so much. Have a great day, and we will talk to you soon. Thanks.